Hello, I'm Jeff Horwich, and this is In the Loop. Keep your eyes ahead, focus on the future. That was a clear theme this week, set, of course, by the president-elect on Sunday when he said, in a way both obvious and redundant, "I have a belief that we need to look forward as opposed to looking backwards." The great orator of our times. It is amazing to watch him work. It's not just Obama. Of course, President Bush says he's not one to dwell on the past, where he made a few mistakes, but whatever, right? And on the TARP, the big financial bailout, let's not worry about where that first $350 billion went. Who knows, anyway? Let's just focus on getting out that next $350. In the tech world, Apple fanboys look ahead to a future without Steve Jobs. Yahoo looks to a future as a juicy buyout target now that there is finally a new CEO. And pilots, if you would, please look ahead for birds. I started out last week's show saying how it feels like everything is kind of on hold until the inauguration. Still feels that way this week. I don't want to get all mushy about it, but it's true. A lot of people feel like they've got a lot riding on Tuesday. The hopes of thousands, millions even, were reflected in a note we got from a listener the other day. His name is Bill Grueling, and he is from Minneapolis.
My current job situation is I don't have one. Every day we get more news about how horrible everything is, and so rather than beat myself up over, oh my gosh, why am I not finding the perfect job, I'm just have decided, well, okay, we'll just wait till the dust settles down some. The event that I'm looking forward to is next Tuesday with the inauguration of a new president. And I think that once it finally starts, corporate America will see Congress and the administration responding, and everybody will see and be hopeful about the progress.
That's Bill Grueling responding to some questions about the economy on our website. He's currently freelancing in his field of technical communications, and he is one of many people hoping the stars will align on Tuesday.
You know, actually, astrologically speaking, Tuesday is an awesome day to have an inauguration.
Well, Sandon Totten, I didn't see you come sit down next to me in our little soundproof booth.
Hey, Jeff.
The producer of our show. You've been looking into this stuff?
Well, yeah, I figured economists have been doing such a poor job of predicting where this whole economic mess is going to go. So I thought I would talk to some other people who have an eye on the future.
Like fortune tellers, you mean? Like
right,
astrologers
right.
And stuff?
Yeah, specifically, I spoke to one astrologer who goes by the name Moon Rabbit.
Moon Rabbit?
Moon Rabbit, yep.
Is that a first and a last name? Or?
Yeah, I think Moon the first, Rabbit the last, yeah.
Okay, Miss Rabbit, what'd she have to say?
Well, she said basically that, you know, these planets, when they move around the sky and they go to different areas of stars, they create these different vibes here on Earth.
All right.
And right now the one to watch is Pluto, which has just entered Capricorn.
Pluto is the planet that has to do basically with destruction and recreation. I believe it's going to uncover all the problems that have been existing for a very long time in all these basic structures that we've built our society on.
So when do you think the global economy might buck up a bit here?
Here's what I say is that by the end of 2012, we've gone through the crisis, we've come out the other side, and there's hope again. Okay.
But the bad news is that's still quite a ways away.
It is. It's the whole first administration for Barack Obama. Poor guy, if he knew what he signed up for, I don't know if he would have done it.
He should have checked with an astrologer before agreeing to run.
I totally agree.
Okay, so that's Moon Rabbit, the astrologer. To most of us, the economic outlook right now is extremely uncertain. Did you talk to anybody who can give you some advice on how to handle your finances?
Well, yeah, for that, I spoke to Melanie Thelberg. She runs a business called Sacred Divination here in the Twin Cities, and she casts runes.
Okay, runes. Explain to me.
Right. So picture little Scrabble tiles, but instead of having letters on them, they've got, like, Viking symbols.
Nifty.
Yeah, you kind of pick them out of a bag and you line them up and they tell your future. So I asked her to give me some advice on my investments.
Go ahead and pull five for me.
All right, here we go.
There we go. This rune in particular is talking about harvest. It's talking about a cycle of time. So long-term and safer is going to be a better choice. This rune in the outcome position is backwards for you, or it's reversed. That means that it's probably not a good time for you to take risks.
Play it safe right now.
Yeah.
Keep it in for the long haul.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is the same advice that my financial planners on the radio have been giving me as well.
So, all right.
So you're right up there.
That's great.
So that's Melanie Thelberg, and like everyone I spoke to, she wanted me to point out that she is not a financial advisor.
Oh, really? That's good to know.
But it's good advice, though.
So with things looking as bad as they are, like economists, I'm sure these folks are getting used to doling out lots of bad news, right?
Yeah, like take these tarot card readers I spoke to, Tracy Hockner and Chuck Bow of Eye of Horus in Minneapolis.
Eye of Horus.
Right. Horus, Egyptian god. He's got a falcon for a head. It's the name of their store.
Okay.
So they use a deck of cards called tarot cards, and they've got these different pictures on them, and they kind of lay them out, and they help tell someone's future. Mm-hmm. And they're getting pretty used to seeing some ominous signs.
Anytime you're trying to deliver difficult news, anytime you have bad news, that's a really rough spot to be in.
I break it to them gently, but I mean, that is what they are paying to hear. But we always look for what are the opportunities around that? Because sometimes those great losses can actually turn out to be something we'll look back and realize that it created a huge shift in our life that made all the difference.
Couple of tarot card readers there. Economists are apologizing left and right for giving people bad predictions and bad advice. Did any of these people with their crystal balls and cards and runes and mysterious potions, did any of them see this coming?
Well, no. Not exactly. Not enough, at least, to pull all their money out of their stocks and invest in gold or anything like that. But one guy, Chuck Bow, the tarot card reader, he said he did see some warning signs in the cards when he was reading them a few months back.
Things like the Five of Pentacles, which shows people outside walking in the snow in destitution and in rags. The Tower would come up. The Tower shows a huge building being struck by lightning and the people falling from the tower, which also shows that there's going to be a huge shift in the status quo.
Mr. President, we have a Moon Rabbit on the phone, something about Pluto and the Five of Pentacles.
Right.
If only somebody had called Bernanke or Bush at that appropriate moment.
Well, actually, interestingly enough, Moon Rabbit, the astrologer, told me that Nancy Reagan did, in fact, use an astrologer.
She did.
And all the astrologers would watch President Reagan's moves, and they'd say that everything he did was impeccably well-timed to the stars.
All right. Memo to Barack Obama. Sandin Totten, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Sandin is the producer of In the Loop, and I am Jeff Horwich. We are online at minnesotapublicradio.org/InTheLoop. You can also find us. We got a very active page on Facebook. Just search In the Loop on there and we'll turn up. President Bush, of course, is very much looking to the future, which right now means a comfortable retirement in Texas. I'm sure it won't be long before he goes the Jimmy Carter route, starts writing poetry and historical fiction. But at the moment, he's got a rather mundane task ahead of him. Moving out. We have been given special access, as we so often are, as the president sorts out the stuff left over from 8 years in Washington. So let's listen in for a moment.
Okay, Mr. President, we have a list of items still left in the White House.
Sure.
Just need you to say whether you want to take them with you, leave them, or throw them, throw them out.
Okay, Timbo, let's do it.
Okay, so first we have your exercise equipment.
Yeah, sure thing.
A treadmill?
Let's take it.
Elliptical?
Take it.
Some sort of ab ball thingy.
Oh, that's my bender ball. I've been looking for that thing.
So that's a yes.
Uh-huh.
The Wii Fit from the Oval Office?
You know it. I got like a whole Wii Fit room set up in Dallas.
Okay. Moving on. Cleaning out your desk, we found this Speak and Spell.
Oh, the Speak and Spell. Yeah, this thing is awesome. Hey, check it out.
N-U-C-U-L-E-R.
Nuclear.
Correct.
Hey, see, I told you guys.
Now, Mr. President, I know you've been hanging on to this this pretzel.
Now, don't even try that. That pretzel was my potential assassin. That's going to my presidential library. Pack it up.
Really, sir? It's kind of disgusting.
Executive privilege. Keep going.
Okay, let's see here. We have your alarm clock.
Yeah, we can leave that for next guy. Still set for 9:30?
I believe so, sir. Yes.
Yeah, good riddance to that, man. Looking forward to finally sleeping in, know what I'm saying?
Okay. Turning to some of the items that were left in the closets. We have a Mission Accomplished t-shirt. And this one says, Heck of a Job.
Yeah, I don't need those.
Finally, sir, Dick Cheney.
What?
Well, he's been holed up in the Roosevelt Room for the last few weeks. It's kind of a Howard Hughes thing going on.
Yeah, just leave him there.
You sure?
Yeah, he's all right. He ain't hurting nobody. We gave him a fake phone. He thinks he destroyed Iran on Tuesday.
Okay, sir. Well, I think that about does it. It's kind of sad, isn't it? Mr. President?
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, Timbinator. I was just practicing my golf swing inside my brain. I'm Jeff Horwich. It's In the Loop for this middle-ish week of January. Interesting week on our blog. We posted this ridiculous new online ad for this program called Microsoft Songsmith. which basically writes music for you as you sing into your computer. You have to check that out. I also put up a post suggesting Venezuelan president slash nascent dictator Hugo Chavez might be gaining a little weight. And holy cow, did the Chavez fans come after me. Sandin and I have decided that we can get a lot more blog traffic if we just work our way around the world, poking fun at one nation's leader at a time. So stay tuned for that. Last week on the show, we invited two guys in to talk about accusations of bias in NPR's coverage of the conflict in Gaza. At the end, I told you NPR's ombudsman expected to write a column on that topic this week, but we haven't seen that yet. I emailed her for an update, but got no reply. I would guess our segment was probably not one of NPR's favorite things for the week, but we'll let you know when that column goes up. Meanwhile, the fighting continued. Egypt has a plan for a truce. Israel's supposed to vote on that on Saturday. Because there is so much news about Gaza right now, we were brainstorming some angles we hadn't heard much about, and here's one for you. The environment. War is, of course, bad news for the people involved, but it's also bad news for the natural world. Certainly that must be true in Gaza, which is a densely populated strip of desert that has seen way more than its share of chemicals and explosions. Looking through our network of sources, we found Jeannie Sowers. Jean is a political scientist with the dual specialties of environmental issues and Middle Eastern politics. She's currently a research fellow with the Belfer Center for Science and International Affairs at Harvard. Jeannie, thanks very much for being on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
In a conflict like the one in Gaza right now, what are the main hazards to the environment that we can expect to see?
Well, I think in Gaza, the environmental problems and the humanitarian problems are actually one and the same. Problems with water supply, water quality, lack of sewage treatment plants. Every time there's a flare-up in the conflict, that infrastructure is destroyed again. And so without a political settlement, you can't build a functioning infrastructure that will, on one hand, safeguard the environment, and on the other hand, basically help people with their immediate needs.
One big example of that, you mentioned water treatment, is, I guess, sewage, right?
Absolutely. The sewage treatment plants, they're completely inadequate as they are, but there's been a lot of investment by the World Bank and others to try to build them. But, you know, in the course of a war, of course, all this breaks down again. And then you get raw sewage basically either going into the streets of what are essentially kind of built-up refugee camps, or you're getting it flowing sort of out into areas where it seeps into the aquifers. The wells that pull up drinking water or agricultural water are now contaminated with sewage.
What about the impact of battle itself? Bombs, rockets, dust?
Mm-hmm. I think the U.S. military actually released a study after the first Gulf War for the effects of air pollution caused by sort of the conflict in Kuwait City, because, of course, you know, they had first, you know, the Iraqi aggression, and then they have the war that sort of goes along with that. And I think that they had, you know, the typical increase that you might expect in problem like respiratory problems and asthma and pneumonia and bronchitis and all the things that, you know, we know essentially what air pollution does to human health.
Well, you have to think about what Palestinians are breathing in through all of this.
And, of course, you've heard these allegations of basically using different kinds of chemicals, whether it's phosphorus or other sorts of...
Yeah, late in the week, this allegation that Israel is dropping white phosphorus bombs.
This is essentially a chemical that it burns very easily, ignites very easily. The problem is, for civilians, it causes severe burning.
Which is why you're not supposed to use it in urban areas, according to international law.
Right.
Well, that must have, whether you use it in a city or out in the countryside, that must have environmental red flags as well, just chucking phosphorus into the air.
Yes, and that's actually, you know, I haven't seen anything on that yet.
We're talking about a desert environment here. How does that affect the time it takes for the environment to heal or for people to clean it up?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think we think of deserts as, you know, sort of with nothing in them and sort of can't be disturbed, but it's quite the opposite. And it's because the kinds of soils that they have can be easily compacted. It's that you don't have rainfall to clear up either air or soil. So you actually have the presence of either air contaminants or contaminants in the soil for long periods of time. And so the effects of war can be much more long-lasting precisely because certain processes that would normally we think sort of clean things up are actually more delayed or very variable. So it's a very, very fragile environment.
Geographically, everything's so close together over there. It's almost like, you know, Minneapolis and St. Paul firing,
exactly.
firing rockets at each other. Wouldn't Israel expect to get some blowback, if that's the right term, from any environmental hazards that they unleash in Gaza?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. You go across the border and you go to an Israeli settlement, or you go to just a regular town and there's ample water and there's green, you know, either grass or olive trees or cultivation, and there's no violence. And you feel that you are in a different world. And so I think for Israelis, there is a disconnect still between thinking that whatever happens in Gaza in terms of environmental consequences would actually come home to roost. But clearly, this conflict is political in origin and it has political goals. So, you know, environmental concerns are just so far at the bottom right now.
Well, Jeannie, thanks very much for helping us get into this particular angle of what's going on over there.
Thank you. And I think it's really interesting you're interested in these kinds of issues.
We're interested in all kinds of things. Jeannie Sowers on the phone with us from her home near the University of New Hampshire. She's an assistant professor there. At the moment, she's also a Harvard fellow. Believe it or not, she was not just some expert we found by Googling or cold calling colleges. She was already in what we call our Public Insight Network here at Minnesota Public Radio and American Public Media. And when we went looking for people with Middle East expertise, there she was. We want you in the network, too. Tell us your areas of knowledge and expertise. You can sign up through In the Loop, if you like, at minnesotapublicradio.org. I'm Jeff Horwich, and let's keep going. Along those same lines, a week or two ago, by email, we cast out a wide net to that network for people around the country who might be willing to come on the show and give us a briefing on an area of news that they follow especially closely. Done that a bunch of times over the past 6 months, and it's always a lot of fun. One new person we heard back from down in Florida was Grant Balfour. Grant, thank you for coming on In the Loop.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So you're going to bring us kind of the week in science news. And of course, there's a ton of that, but just some particular things that caught your attention. Why are you so into the science beat?
Because everything that there is science. I also have a deep and abiding love for big words.
Well, you're in the right topic then, I suppose.
Yeah.
The first thing you mentioned to us, noises in space, or rather, I guess, noises from space, since, what, space is a vacuum. You can't actually hear any noise when you're out there. But what's this all about?
So in Palestine, Texas, NASA has a facility where instead of sending up rockets, they send up balloons to listen to radio noise. Well, they sent up a balloon, and instead of listening or hearing this nice sort of distant shushing echo, what they got was a sound that was 6 times louder than every radio source in the universe combined.
Are you telling me that they think they heard the Big Bang?
They heard something that's louder than the Big Bang. It's not a microphone malfunction. It's something that's out there, that's everywhere. They calibrated, you know, within the atmosphere, outside the atmosphere.
I guess we don't know what it is, huh?
Not a clue, and that's what makes it fun.
Let's go on to your next item here. Okay. Scientists have learned how to make things levitate. That sounds cool.
Well, it's on a very small scale. It starts with devices called MEMS, micro-electro-mechanical systems.
These are machines that are so small you need a microscope, both to assemble them and to see them.
You actually need like an electron microscope. Hmm. And they do all kinds of things. They sense chemicals. Right now, they're using them in the airbags in your car.
So what's the function of levitation in these things?
When you get that small, it's really hard to lubricate a gear.
But if the parts aren't actually touching...
Yes, because that way the parts will levitate off each other. It's as if you don't need to put oil in your car. You simply sort of, you make it out of the right materials, and there's no friction anymore. So that's what these fellows at Harvard University, where most of the work's being done, they're trying to harness a levitation force to lubricate tiny machines.
Which is, of course, as tiny as it is, it's too massive a concept for... most people like me to actually wrap our heads around, but we'll have to take their words for it that it works, or it can work, right?
Yes. They've already applied for patents.
But they haven't actually done it.
No.
All still in theory. On to the next item. Our organic veggies, they're not so organic anymore, huh?
This just came out in the latest Scientific American. The problem is that organic farmers don't like using chemical fertilizers because they're trying to grow things organically. The best fertilizer that you have is animal manure. And the problem is that 70% of the antibiotics that are made in this country are being given to farm animals. Out it goes, onto our fields, and right into the food chain, especially with organic veggies. The main problems that they've identified so far are with raw vegetables, salad greens, lettuce, spinach, and things that grow inside the ground. So potatoes, carrots, wind up getting... some pretty big doses of antibiotics. Not enough to actually stop a cold, say.
Pneumonia or something like that, yeah.
Yes, exactly. But enough that you're getting it absorbed into your body.
And the extent to which that is actually a danger is something still being studied and debated, but many people are concerned about what we don't know.
Exactly, yes.
Is there any way around it? Can you find an animal and thus an animal's poop that doesn't have these doses of antibiotics in it now?
What the researchers have found is by composting the manure in a particular way that generates heat, it will eliminate 99% of the chemicals, they think.
Oh, so this is not a hopeless case.
No, not hopeless at all.
And one more item from you. Scientists are touting the discovery of what they call the Marilyn Monroe hormone. What is that?
That would be estradiol, which is a female sex hormone.
Okay.
It happened at University of Texas, where biologists held what in essence was a beauty pageant. They had 52 study subjects. Instead of a talent portion of the contest, they swabbed their mouths for their saliva. And they found that women who had a high level of this one particular hormone tended to have curvy figures with a high hip-to-waist ratio, like Marilyn Monroe.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a what the scientists call in their study a greater likelihood of becoming acquainted with new potential mates.
And they track this back to this particular hormone, huh?
One chemical, perhaps available in patch form someday. I don't know.
Well, Grant, thanks for stopping by with the week in science news. It's been good to talk to you.
It's been great talking with you. Thank you very much.
That's Grant Balfour joining us from a studio in Boynton Beach, Florida. He collects his favorite science headlines on his blog, guildofscientifictroubadours.com. If that's a little tricky to remember or to spell, we'll link you there from our In the Loop homepage. I started out the show today talking about anticipation. In a way, the biggest news this week has been what's happening next week. One listener told us he's hoping the job market improves when the new president is sworn in. Lots of us are hoping the stock markets get a bounce. In a way, you know, it's Barack Obama's own fault. There's a huge amount of hope and, you might say, outsized expectation riding on his inauguration. It seems like anything's possible. So, here's a little song to sing as you drum your fingers and twiddle your thumbs through the weekend. When Tuesday comes, the sun will get to shining. Then I'm gonna shut my trap. And I will quit my whining. If change is gonna come, then surely I can get me some. You say change can't happen overnight, but I just think that's dumb. Whoa, when Tuesday comes, they'll open every door. Find my credit cards paid off, and my IRA will soar. A promotion and a raise, all despite my drunken haze. Find a random $20 bill in a bag of Frito-Lays. My hemorrhoids will suddenly stop itching. I wake up to a supermodel cooking in my kitchen. In my mind, soul, and wallet, I'll be rich. With an endless head of hair just like that Rod Blagojevich show. Oh, when Tuesday comes, Iran will send us flowers. Kim Jong-il will call ourselves, and we will sit and talk for hours. Israel and Palestine decide just where to draw the line. And the Russians will stop acting like they've lost their blooming mind. Oh, when Tuesday comes, I'll be 6 inches taller, yeah. Fuzzy woodland creatures perch upon my arm if I just holler. Did a positive decision on my reality show audition. Well, this world'll be my tailwind instead of constant opposition. Oh, from the rich folks to the bums, cross your fingers and your thumbs. Pick yourself up off the ground. Oh, everything will turn around when Tuesday comes. In the Loop is produced, as always, by Sandin Totten and me. Edited this week by Jim Bickle, with extra help from Anna Wagle and my White House bureaucrat, Tom Weber. I'm Jeff Horwich, and I just don't know what we're going to talk about next week.